Welcome everyone to the Window Podcast. We have a special episode for you today. Continuing our World Cup preview shows, we're going to be previewing Group B today. So we are joined by experts from the United States, Iran, England, and Wales, and going to be taking a look at Group B. So wanted to go around and introduce everyone to start. Dom, we'll start with you, representing England.
Yep. Hi, I'm Dom Smith on Twitter at Mr. Dom Smith, and I cover England for englandfootball.org and a number of other websites.
All right. Ryan, let's go to you next.
Hi, I'm Ryan. Nice to be here. I'm the editor and founder of Alternative Wales. We're a Welsh football culture magazine and podcast and just sort of all sorts of media. So yeah, it's all about fan culture on the pitch, off the pitch, and everything to do with Welsh football.
Great. Thanks for joining us, Ryan. Adam, I'll go to you next.
Hey, I'm Adam Bells. I'm the host of the Scuffed Podcast, which is just covers the U.S. men's national team and the U.S. women's national team. You can find it on Twitter at Scuffed Pod and all the podcast platforms. You can find it at those as well.
All right. Thank you. And Irfan.
Hello, I'm Irfan. That's at ERI1806 on Twitter. I mostly write football articles for many different sites, and not only about Iranian football, but Asian football as a whole.
All right. Welcome. So really glad to have all of you. And again, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. Group B is one of those interesting groups at the World Cup where you look top to bottom, and I think you would not be surprised to see any of these four teams get out of the group. Iran is a really tough team from Asia. England, probably the favorite, from a betting perspective at least, but with some of the recent form, no sure thing. And then the United States and Wales as well are going to be competitive and certainly not a guarantee to get out of the group, but will not be surprised to see any of the four teams reach the knockout stage. Joe, anything you wanted to add about the group in terms of expectations, preview, before we jump into some of the more team-specific previews or expectations?
No, not particularly. I mean, this you kind of covered it pretty well. This is a group that I think you and I have gone back and forth on in terms of who's coming out of it. So, yeah, just interested to see what everybody has to say as we kind of do a bit of a deep dive into each team here.
Great. Irfan, I'm going to go backwards and start with you. I know you introduced yourself last, but want to hear about Iran and hear your thoughts about the team. I think if looking at the Asian teams that are going to be in Qatar, Iran has to be one of those with the highest expectations, or just about the highest expectations, I think, among the Asian teams. What are you expecting to see from the national team?
Well, yeah, obviously, I think out of all the groups, all the Asian teams, at least Iran has got the highest chance to advance to the next round. And the national team, obviously, it's gone through some changes over the past few months. I mean, a big change is the managerial one, return of some old players, obviously. And a few months ago with Dragan Skocic as head coach, well, he lost the dressing room, really. Everything was just out of control. The players were in the camp, during the camps, actually, players were awake till the morning, some even skipping breakfast. So it was just not working out. So the Federation made the best decision to sack him. And who else better to bring than our former head coach, Carlos Queiroz? And my expectations for this World Cup is we need to reach the knockout stage, because it's been a long time coming. This is now our sixth appearance. We've never reached the knockout stage. So I think this year it's a great chance. Qatar is obviously, it's very similar to Iran. It's very close, actually. So I think we have an advantage in that part. And then obviously the fans. We have a lot of fans. We always do. It doesn't matter where the World Cup is. So we'll have a lot of support from there. I think we should finish second in this group.
That's very optimistic. I think some of our other panelists will disagree with you, but It is hard to dispute that that's not that that is certainly a possibility. They're going to set the tone right out of the gate against England. What are your expectations for that match?
Okay, I'll be honest. I think we're going to lose that match. Even though there are people saying, oh, maybe they can hold on to a draw. Maybe England will underestimate Iran. But I honestly don't think so. I think that England, obviously, they had a bad international window. They couldn't win a single game in their Nations League group. And they only scored one goal from open play, I think it was. And so I don't think that, I still don't think that we will win against England, because England, their quality, their individual talent is just much higher than us, especially in their attack. So yeah, I think that we will lose that game. Maybe but it will be close. Maybe 1-0 or 2-1.
And in terms of players to watch, for those who might not be as familiar with the Iranian national team, who's someone that might be a little bit unknown that you think could make a name for themselves in Qatar?
Okay, so I'm actually going to mention two names here. First of all, it's Sadiq Muharrami. He's the right back who plays for Dinamo Zagreb. He actually plays later tonight for them in the Champions League. So he was getting a lot of criticism from the Iranian fans until not too long ago, because he wasn't really putting in the best performances. He was a backup right back for Dinamo, actually. But over the past few months, he's really improved his performances. He's kind of cemented the spot in the starting lineup, basically guaranteed his spot for the World Cup. And he's been putting really good performances in the Champions League. I mean, against Chelsea, against AC Milan. So the fans are really happy with him. So I think he could make a big name out of himself. Then another one is Amir Hossein-Zada, kind of an interesting name, but he plays for Charleroi in the Belgian League, and this is his first season in Europe. Last year, he was in the domestic league, in the Iranian league with Esteghlal. He won the league last year, and then the club Charleroi, who has some Iranian owners, bought him, and he's not been doing so bad with them, so I think he's only 21 as well, so he could do well for Iran, in my opinion. That is if he gets called up, because yeah.
And he's a midfielder, right?
Yeah, he is a attacking midfielder, but he plays winger mostly, so okay. A left winger.
And so, what sets him apart in your mind? Is it his speed or skill or both, or what?
Why is he? He has good speed. He has good speed, and he has good skill as well. I mean, that's what you would expect from a winger. One thing that last year he had a problem with was his decision-making. Like, sometimes he wouldn't pass in the right times, or sometimes he would pass where he shouldn't pass. But I think that this year, training with in the Belgian league has really improved that. But he does still have some weaknesses, so.
Just wanted to ask one more question. Are you concerned about just, I would say, the competition during World Cup qualifying and coming into a group with two UEFA teams, one CONCACAF team? Do you think the team is properly prepared for the competition? Do you have any concerns there?
In the World Cup qualifiers, I know we finished top of our group, but I wouldn't really call it an achievement. We only had one really good test, and that was against South Korea. We drew the one at home, and we lost away. So I wouldn't really... So the standards of that group, the teams were really low ranked. So it's not comparable to the teams at the World Cup at all. But we did play against two top nations in the last international window. We played against Uruguay and Senegal. So that's really good preparation, actually. We haven't been able to get good friendlies in a while, so I was really happy with that. We obviously beat Uruguay, which is, I think, that's our biggest win in our history, because we've never beaten a nation who's won the World Cup, so that was massive. And then we drew against Senegal, a very strong Senegal side, who are the African champions. So I think and also later next month, actually, we have two friendlies against one Nicaragua, another CONCACAF side like the USA, and then against Tunisia. Nicaragua, maybe not the best friendly, but Tunisia are a very decent side, and I think we do have good preparation for the World Cup.
I would agree. I think during that last window among these four teams, Iran was the only team to actually get a win.
Yes, definitely. I mean, we entered the top 20 of the FIFA rankings after a while as well, so that's great news for our football.
Yeah, great. I think right off the bat, definitely a tough team. Ryan, want to hear from you about Wales and what you think Wales are up against, especially given Irfan's confidence about Iran and what he thinks they can do.
On our podcast, we spoke to an Iranian podcaster recently, and he scared the living daylights out of me, and Irfan hasn't done much to help that. I think we're in a unique group where England are going to expect to win it, and the rest of us all expect to go second. I don't think there's anyone in the group that may go, you know, we'll have a good go. Everyone wants to go through, and that frightens me. What Irfan just mentioned then about the test to qualify, I think Wales come from a unique position where we're one of the only teams who really had to work hard to qualify. England breeze their group every time, and that is almost their downfall sometimes because they don't test themselves in qualifying. Iran, the same. The US, I think they had a few more tests along the way, but they should be qualifying out of CONCACAF every time. So we've had to work hard to get there, and we got that unknown quantity, almost being the underdog. We're not a World Cup regular like the other three teams are. I go in and out of being confident and not confident, because on our day, we're good enough to beat anyone, but we're not very good at breaking teams down who are defensively organised, and that's what I fear from Iran especially.
Do you think that works in Wales' favour, being sort of the newcomer that's not used to being there? And obviously the US was not at the last World Cup either, but it's been a long time for Wales. And
yeah,
there's an excitement there that I don't think, in my view, is quite there with these other three nations about being at the World Cup. I think there's expectations that teams will progress. And of course, you know, there will be a ton of excitement depending on the outcomes, but coming into the tournament, I feel like Wales does have a bit of an edge there.
Yeah, that's been our sort of secret ingredient really over the last sort of decade, as we sort of had a bit more success, or at least get into tournaments, has been the togetherness of the squad and the sort of the link between the squad and the fans. And you can't discount that. You know, we've kept a lot of the squad together since 2016. Quite a few have stuck around, you know, at the end of their footballing lives. And we've brought some really good young players through, and they've kept that sort of togetherness, and that will give us an edge. I think, you know, at the end of the day, we are just happy to be in a World Cup because, you know, pretty much no one has ever experienced one in Wales before, let alone actually go to one. So that will definitely help. And I think the players will be playing, you know, like someone like Gareth Bale, for example, and Aaron Ramsey, they know they're not going to get another chance to play at a World Cup. They've built the last 4 years of their career on getting to this World Cup. Gareth Bale has been on autopilot in at club level to play in this World Cup. And I think you can't discount how much it means to the team and the squad and the country, because I mean, like, Wales as a nation to be on this world stage and have people talking about Wales, you know, as Wales, not Wales as part of the UK or Wales next to England. We're very much going to hold our own in the tournament, and that really is what matters more than anything else. Obviously, I hope we get out of the group. That is the aim. But like I said, it's a bit of a lottery, really, this group. So there's no shame in going out as long as we make a good account of ourselves.
So Ryan, talk to us a little bit about the squad, and specifically, I'm interested to know, you know, who. So most teams, I feel like, you know, who are headed to a World Cup tend to bring maybe one kind of wild card player. Yes, and by that I mean a player who maybe wasn't expected to go. Does Wales have a player like that, you think, that maybe? Who would that be in your mind?
So there's a lot of conversation about this after the weekend. So unfortunately, I'm a Cardiff fan, and I obviously watched Cardiff lose 2-0 to Swansea on the weekend in a very drab performance. But Swansea's first goal was scored by Ollie Cooper. So Ollie Cooper is an under-21 international at the moment, but he's recently come into Swansea's first team over this season, and he's sort of been their breakout star. There is a lot of calls to take him to the World Cup. The reservation for me comes that he is not featured in one squad with a senior team. So if he was to go, this would be the first experience of senior team football. And it's almost come a little bit too soon for him. If he'd broken through a little bit before the September international break and he could have brought him along then I'd be more inclined to say, yes, he'd go. He's what's being talked about at the moment. I think I would probably say 24 or 25 of the spaces are as good as done. We do have some injury doubts over Joe Allen in particular, who would be a massive miss in midfield. So I think Ollie Cooper could be an ideal stand-in for him. There's also Luke Harris, who's playing at Fulham at the moment. He's been superb for their under-23s, from what I can gather, and has had a few minutes off the bench this season. Obviously, Fulham doing really well in the Premier League. He was in the squad in September. So he has had that experience with the team and, around the camp. So I think there's a good chance he will go. There's no one I think that we'll take that is sort of unknown that will command a starting space. They would very much just be squad players almost coming along for the ride and the experience going into the future. I'd say, our starting 11 is as good as sorted, bar one or two, who plays in goal, Danny Ward or Wayne Hennessy, does Kiefer Moore start? But very few questions are being asked about most of the squad. It's just who is fit, who can go. Whether Rob Page will take a couple of gambles. Because we've all been about continuity, and is, for example, Chris Gunter still in the squad, who's our record caps holder. He's currently playing for Wimbledon, doesn't get much football. If you were basing this purely off quality and form, he wouldn't go to the World Cup. But he's been an integral part of the squad for so, so long. And I think having the 26 an extended squad allows you to take a couple of characters. And I think you can't discount how important good characters are around the camp, when you're stuck in a hotel. And Chris Gunter is an integral part of that. So he will go, I think. And that's where I think he might just... he'd opt for experience this time and then start blooding in new lads when the European qualifiers come along next year.
Yeah, in the next cycle. So my last question for you is, so what has been the reaction of sorts for Welsh fans to Gareth Bale coming to Major League Soccer? Do you guys view that as a good move or something that maybe he could have done better, or what's the view there?
So as a Cardiff fan, we were hoping he would come to Cardiff. It was very unrealistic, but it did almost happen. So it was a little bit of a shame not to see that happen. But I think it was for the best that he did go to the MLS, because from my perspective, it's a slightly lower tempo compared to like the champ. Well, not lower tempo as such. The championship is relentless in terms of schedule, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday. And he would never have kept up with that, and he'd be a target. Whereas in the MLS, he can almost afford to be a bit of a luxury player. I know he hasn't really ingratiated himself with LAFC's fan base, because I don't think he's completed a 90 minutes yet, as far as I'm aware. There's been a few moments, but from what I've seen, and it was similar to how he played in the Nations League games in Spain in September. I think he's very much just in cruise control, just managing his body through to the World Cup. I don't think, as harsh as it probably sounds, I don't think he really cares about club football at the moment. And what LAFC offered him was a avenue to sort of pick his own schedule, play when he can, play when he wants, manage his own body, and just make sure it gets him through to the World Cup. Maybe after the World Cup, if he still wants to keep going, and he sort of reignited his love for football, club football, that is, post World Cup, then you may see a slightly different Gareth Bale. But I just think he's so concerned about making the World Cup that I think he's playing in first or second gear at the moment, and he's not the player he used to be. We're all aware of that. He's a very different prospect now. He's almost like going to be our dead ball specialist, or, you know, he's in the team because he could score from anywhere at any time, but he's not the same player who's going to be running at defenders and frightening the life out of people like he was 5 or 6 years ago. So we are aware of that. But I'm just glad he's going to get the chance to play in a World Cup, because he is our best ever player, and it will go some way to be beaten. So yeah, I'm just really, really glad for him. He's going to make it, I hope.
I would agree. I would agree. He's definitely one of the players that's at the top of my list in terms of players I'm looking forward to seeing at the World Cup. And being that it is his first and, like, as you mentioned, likely only time being there, it's definitely a special opportunity for him too. So, speaking of MLS, let's talk about the USA national team. I think there's probably a little bit less certainty compared to what you were describing the Wales team is going to look like when they take the field. They do match up first. USA and Wales is the first game in the match for the United States. Want to hear from Adam from a USA perspective about, first of all, what do you think the team will look like when they step on the pitch against Wales?
Well, I was just thinking as Ryan was talking there, how much of a contrast the U.S. is to basically everything he said about Wales. The connection between the fans and the team, there's not that much of a connection, I don't think, between the nation and the national team. Not just because soccer is a, you know, tertiary, or, you know, the third or fourth sport in the country. I don't know what the latest numbers are, but because we didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup. So I think, just like your casual sports fan thinks of it as, like, the women are good at soccer, the men suck, and they don't pay attention to the men's national team. Now, we can still fill a 30,000 seat stadium in Cincinnati for a qualifier against Mexico, and those are fun. But it is, I think this team is going into this World Cup with, I think, sort of the unstated mission of, like, bringing the nation back on board with the project. And it's a young team. So because of that 2018 failure, everything had to turn over. There's nobody who's in the squad because they've been there forever. It's a very young team. And yes, there's a lot of talent. You know, they're players playing at big clubs, but it's never coalesced under Berhalter. I think the high point of the whole World Cup cycle so far was that win over Mexico and Cincinnati. And well, we've seen Mexico is kind of a mess too. So that victory has less shine on it than it did at the time. So yeah, lots of uncertainty. The last two friendlies, the September window, as you guys all know, the US was very bad, looked horrible. Nothing really positive to take from that window at all. The only thing that fans like me and a lot of other fans can sort of hold on to is we were missing a couple of key players, Yunus Musa and Tim Weah in particular. And we'll just have to hope that, you know, Musa in the midfield gives us a little more coherence and solidity when we play Wales on November 21st, and that Tim Weah gives us more attacking bite, more cutting edge, because we had really neither of those things in September against Japan and Saudi Arabia.
So I don't know if you're trolling people or just and having a bit of fun or not, but I saw recently on your Twitter feed that you're putting out that Pulisic isn't going to start.
No, I didn't say he isn't going to. I mean, he's going to start, right?
Yeah.
But
I don't know. That's my question to you. Do you think so?
Yeah. He'll start. My thing with Pulisic is, I think I think Weah stretches a defense and moves off the ball in a way that is just absolutely singular in our player pool. And even though, you know, he plays for Lille, like, nobody watches Lille, and he doesn't score a lot of goals. But when he played for the U.S., he was our most dangerous player throughout qualifying, no doubt about it. And Pulisic was not. Pulisic, he gets in his head when he plays for the U.S. Maybe he gets in his head when he plays for Chelsea too, but he just tries to do too much. He gets he's like trying to carry the team, and he dribbles a lot. He ends up getting hurt. This is what happened at El Salvador. And so I said on Twitter, my starting lineup would be Reyna on the left wing, Weah on the right wing, because Reyna is now healthy, or at least we think he's healthy. He played an hour for Dortmund in their last match, and he's fantastic. Like, he's an unbelievable talent. So, but you know, that made me a lot of friends on the internet saying
that. I can only imagine. And then, so give me your two cents on Brendan Aaronson. How do you think his season's gone so far at Leeds, and what do you see his role being for the U.S.? I think he's on the plane.
For sure, yeah. He's on the plane. I think he probably comes off the bench. I mean, one idea that's been thrown around is to start him against England to just like really harass England and, you know, like utilize his pressing prowess, I guess you would say. But I think for the most, like for our best 11, he's not on it. He's coming off the bench. There's just no place for him. And when you put him in the, so you can't, he's not going to start for me over Pulisic, Reyna, or Weah on the wing. Mm-hmm. You put him in the midfield, he just gets like physicaled out of the game. That's not a proper use of the language, but he gets like, he gets knocked out of the game physically because he's a small guy. And one thing that the U.S., one thing that Berhalter, who has, I think, deserves a lot of criticism for how he's handled the team since he took over, you know, almost 4 years ago. One thing that he's done is he's identified a good midfield, which is Adams, Musa, and Weston McKennie. And it's not the most technical. This isn't like Toni Kroos and Luka Modric or anything, but they do have the ability to kind of control a game and like control the middle of the field. So I just don't see Aaronson working in the midfield either. So where do you put him? What, do you play him at striker? No, I think he's coming off the bench.
Yeah. I was going to mention MMA because I think, and I'm curious for your thoughts as well. I mean, to me, that seems like probably our starting midfield for every single game.
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Because yeah, as you mentioned, you know, I think the dynamism that it gives to us, is probably our best shot at being able to pull out some sort of result from these games. So, okay, good. Brandon, any other questions on the U.S.?
I think Adam, you made a good point in terms of just the contrast against Wales, and I think it's something that probably concerns a lot of U.S. fans: is how will a team to come together? That seems to always be the question, whether it be in qualifying, whether it be in friendlies. Now at the World Cup, I think there's cautious optimism, but to me, I feel that is just constantly going to be a question, is will the team come together? And I do think with that midfield, they have played a decent amount together, which hopefully should help. There have been injuries, and that's something that I think hopefully they can also get over in time for Qatar. But what are your realistic expectations for this team? Because there's always a lot of what ifs. Will this happen? Will that happen? What do you think is a realistic expectation for the United States at the World Cup?
I mean, it's gonna be a boring answer, but I think the whole range of possibility is possible. I mean, I think on its day, the U.S., if they played well, they could beat England. It could happen, but it's probably not gonna happen. And also, we could lose all three games, you know? I just don't, yeah, lottery. Ryan used the word lottery. I feel like that's what it is for the U.S. I think there's a decent chance that things will come together and they'll make a good account of themselves. But boy, I can't make a prediction. And everybody in the U.S. wants the team to get out of the group. I think that's sort of the expectation. That's been what the U.S. has done most of the time. But, I don't know that I don't know that that's a realistic, you know, expectation necessarily.
Yeah. Do you think that there's anything to Berhalter having lost the locker room at all?
I don't think so. I'm just
thinking that question purely off of, you know, some of the player reactions we saw in September when players were subbed out and et cetera, et cetera. you know, just curious, you know, how, what your thoughts were on, you know, on him and if, you know, if they're still with him, you know, he got them to the World Cup.
I mean, it's possible that there's like, you know, a lot of locker room unrest. I don't think, my guess is not true, but like, his player, some of his player selections have been kind of crazy, you know, like John Brooks and Tim Ream starting every week for Fulham. He's not even in the picture, and instead we started a guy named Aaron Long, who is not very good and plays for New York Red Bulls. And then the other guy next in line behind Aaron Long apparently is Mark McKenzie, who plays at Genk in Belgium, and he's just a walkabout king, man. He is a mess out there way too often. So, like, I mean, that's another thing, is if we play the wrong center back, we play Mark McKenzie. If we start Mark McKenzie in a World Cup game, like against Wales, you're gonna get like two good opportunities because of mistakes that he makes. And I don't know. There could be like a 11th hour surprise where Ream gets called up or John Brooks gets called up. Hopefully, Cameron Carter-Vickers is called up and plays in the World Cup if Chris Richards is not healthy. Chris Richards, who's mostly sitting on the bench at Crystal Palace, so. I mean, there's like all kinds of concerns. I could go on for hours, but
The Robinson injury was.
But on the other hand, I mean, like Weah and Pulisic and Musa McKennie and say Josh Sargent or Ricardo Pepi. These are good soccer players. They can make even elite teams pay. So I mean, we can dream. Sabaki. We can dream. You know.
No PFOC, no Sabaki.
I was just looking at PFOC. I was just looking at PFOC's underlying numbers. He's his non-penalty XG plus XA is less than Josh Sargent's was at Werder Bremen.
There we go.
I'm not a PFOC guy. Bring him for
a change of pace. I'm a big stats guy, so I love that.
Bring him for a change of pace, but he's not gonna save the attack.
Can I ask about the goalkeeper situation? Because I feel like from a sort of a English football perspective, club football perspective, America have always seemed to have really good goalkeepers, you know, Brad Fiedel being the first, Tim Howard being the names that spring to mind. I feel like that might be a weaker spot on the pitch. Is Zach Steffen is number one, is he, at the moment, who isn't having a good season at Middlesbrough?
Right. I think probably Turner is number one, Turner, the backup at Arsenal. But so Berhalter has stuck with guys who have not performed for a long time before cutting them loose. And he's definitely done that with Zach Steffen. He's not just been bad for Middlesbrough. He's been bad for the U.S. too. So fingers crossed, Berhalter doesn't still think of Steffen as his number one. I think it's still possible. But I think for most fans, Matt Turner is the number one, and most likely for Berhalter too.
Yeah.
And he's a good shot stopper. He's pretty bad with his feet, but he's a good shot stopper.
I'm definitely expecting to see Turner in Qatar.
Can I just ask one more question about...
Go ahead, Arpa.
I noticed his name wasn't really mentioned much when I saw the U.S. Jordan Sebastião, I think that's how you pronounce it. I think he plays for Union Berlin. He's been having a good season, so will he be in the squad, in your opinion? Because I think there are some problems between him and the manager.
Yeah, I think the best bet is no, he will not be in the squad. My personal view is he should be in the squad as a change of pace. You know, he's a physical striker. He wins a lot of balls in the air. He's really good at scoring with his head. He scores a lot of goals in transition for Union Berlin. But like I was just telling Joe, he's not a prolific chance generator, or, you know, he's not prolific in getting on the end of chances and scoring a lot of goals. His non-penalty XG plus XA is like not great. So I'm not so concerned about PFOC. I think the way the U.S. wants to play, it should be Josh Sargent, who is quietly been having an excellent season in the championship, and or Ricardo Pepi, who is, I think, probably Berhalter's favorite at the moment.
And he's doing all right in the Netherlands.
He's doing great. He's been there like six games. He has five goals. Beat PSV over the weekend. Scored a goal. So
scored a goal in that one, yeah.
Right. I want to hear from Dom. You know, he's hearing these other three teams, Wales, England, Wales, United States, Iran, and sitting back and probably thinking these guys are fighting it out for second at best. What are your expectations for England, Dom? Where do you think the team stands right now?
Yeah, I think if you'd asked that question in May or so, maybe, you know, April, May, England were probably one of the favourites to actually lift the World Cup, if not the favourites. But they had a horrendous UEFA Nations League campaign. in which they didn't even win a game. And I think that's maybe brought expectation back down to earth a little bit. They were outstanding at the European Championships last summer. A lot of England fans wouldn't say so. They would say that it was another easy draw, which Gareth Southgate and England benefited from, and then England didn't play very good football. But actually, if you study international football and the teams that win international football tournaments, they don't play good football. You cannot play Liverpool, Manchester City football and win trophies at international level. Certainly not at the European Championships or the World Cup. You have to defend by having the ball and attack by having one or two more chances than your opponents and hoping that you score yours and they don't. It very much is a pragmatic game. And I think Southgate's done, generally speaking, a good job at setting England up like that and identifying that as the way to play. I would understand any England fans listening to this who think that Southgate's in-game management isn't particularly good, and I would agree with that. England weren't able to turn the tide when Croatia were starting to have more of a grip on the game in the World Cup semi-final in Russia, and England also weren't able to turn the tide in at Wembley last summer when Italy, after maybe 35, 40 minutes into that final, Italy started to grapple the game back into their own control, and from there England were never able to regain that. But England, generally speaking, seem a team that understand how international football works. The reason why France won the World Cup in 2018 is because they adopted much the same tact. You know, Deschamps at the time didn't have a large pool of players. He could quite easily have done, because France, as we know, have better players than any other team on the planet. But he kept his squad small in the lead up to the World Cup, and he had a few select players. And with that system and that defined style of pragmatic play, they just about got through every game and won the World Cup. They didn't play brilliant football, and they could have played way better football, but it's all about risk and reward in international football. And if you risk it to go for a 5-0 win, you might lose 1-0 and you're out of a tournament. So the expected tournament for England would be win the group. How that looks is, I don't know. Each fan would say that might look slightly differently. But I think all fans would agree that England are expected to win the group, might face a Senegal or a side like that in the second round and probably win that just, and then face France in a quarterfinal and lose. Now, the caveat to that, whenever you plot out a tournament, someone is always there to say, oh, it's tournament football. It never goes like that. It all, you know, things happen, events happen, and what ends up happening is different to what you expect. I actually would say that will happen. I would say this is one World Cup in which we can actually fairly confidently predict how well England do. I think they are good enough to win the group and will have prepared well enough to do so. I think they will win their round of 16 game looking less comfortable, but they'll get over the line. And I think they'll face France in the next round, and they will be the worst side, and they will lose to them. That said, I mean, England could go all the way. It's not that they're more likely to go all the way out than any other team in this group, and I think they're as likely to go all the way as a Belgium or a Netherlands or side like that. But I don't think they will. So. Yeah. If you'd asked me in May, then England were one of the favourites. I don't think they are anymore. I think it will be quarterfinals, but they're, you know, if it goes well for them and they start playing some good stuff, they could win the tournament.
And I think one of the things that you mentioned, which we haven't really talked about, because it's been a different conversation, right? The first three nations we discussed, really, we're talking about more what is the group stage going to look like. And with England, it's more of a how far are they going to go in this tournament? And with Group A, the fact that the winner of Group B plays a second place team in Group A in the round of 16, the Netherlands are heavy favorites to win Group A. And so I think any of these four teams themselves probably would think that if we win the group, I think there's a strong possibility that not only will we win the group, but be able to go to the quarterfinals. So do you think that changes the mindset at all for England in terms of, are they really going to be focused on winning the group versus just progressing out of the group? Do you think that that's on their mind at all?
I think Southgate being pragmatic and defensive in essence will not take this group for granted. It's his, the way that he's managed is such that you don't take teams for granted, however lacking their pedigree, if you, I hate that word, but pedigree in footballing history might be. Then again, if England are looking to the latter rounds and assuming that they will, even if the tournament goes badly, scrape through second, I don't think that's an awful thing, because they're struggling to cut a squad down to 26. It's not like they're a team struggling to fill a 26-man squad. There are going to be some very impressive players that miss out on this squad. And if England's first 11, whoever that might be, I've got a fairly good idea, but if their first 11 all end up getting injured within a week of the tournament, touch wood that doesn't happen, I'm pretty sure their second team could give these three sides a decent game as well. That doesn't mean that I take Iran or the States or Wales lightly, and I don't think England will either. And I think they'll probably struggle in all three games and draw at the very least one of them. But I think England have got enough to get through the group. I do think they will have done considerable research on all four group A sides, because you just don't know who's going to come out of that group. I think Holland probably will win. I think you'd expect the Netherlands to win that group, more because of their attacking talent than because of their defensive strength. I don't think defending has necessarily been the Dutch's strong point in World Cup history, but whoever England get, I think they could make the quarterfinals, certainly.
In terms of the squad, is it pretty settled, would you say? And I guess a secondary question to that is, I've seen a lot of hubbub, for lack of a better word, about Harry Maguire. So I'm curious for your thoughts on him and his form, particularly with the England team.
If you ask Twitter, which I would encourage you never do, if you ask Twitter whether the England squad is secure, then Twitter would tell you no. But Gareth Southgate will have known his England squad many weeks ago. And if not all 26, then 24 at the very least. That squad he's not a reactionary manager to form necessarily. He gives players call-ups when they're in good form and Southgate-type players, and I put that in inverted commas. But he doesn't necessarily muck around with the squad too often. I think that's generally a good thing. You have to approach international football like it's a club squad, in that you've got to have not a nailed on lineup, but some key players. So I think the squad will be largely decided. In terms of Harry Maguire, I think Harry Maguire, it's not his fault that he cost £85 million. The signing fee with which he joined Manchester United, it's not really fair to hold a player ransom to that, because they didn't decide how much they are worth, mm-hmm. Or how much the club signs them for. It's also not his fault that the club who spent £85 million for them on him is one of the most famous clubs on earth. He's awkward in the way he plays football. He doesn't look assured on the ball, but he is, if not an elite level centre back, then an extremely good professional centre back. He's been error prone this season and last season, and he looks entirely shot of confidence and someone that looks like he needs maybe a month away from the game to collect his thoughts. And that's easy for me to say, sat in my living room now, not knowing what it's like to be Harry Maguire. But I do think he does need some time away from the pitch. I don't think he'll get that, by the way, because I think Southgate recognises that for him, the player has barely ever put a foot wrong. I think he got sent off in a Nations League game with Denmark 2 years ago after 31 minutes, and he was horrendous in that match. And I'm only going off 31 minutes, by the way, so you can imagine how bad he was. And he was bad in England's last game, in which they drew 3-3 with Germany at Wembley, and he was genuinely solely culpable for two of the goals. But besides that, out of 48 caps, or 47, I can't quite remember, to have played badly in two out of 47 games, I think that's pretty good, actually. He doesn't play very well for Manchester United. Indeed, he doesn't even get in their squads anymore. but I think he will go. And one of the reasons is no centre-back or defender at all has ever scored more goals for England. And he is such a threat at set pieces that while someone like Eric Dier might be a more stable shout in terms of doing the defensive stuff well for England at the moment, I'm not sure Eric Dier is necessarily as big a goal-scoring threat, though he is a goal-scoring threat, as Harry Maguire. I think Maguire scored 7 England goals, and no defender in history can claim that, even the great Bobby Moore. So he'll be on the plane. Whether he plays, I think he just about will. If I was the manager, I'd be taking him into the squad because he's a seasoned England player, but not playing him. But I think Southgate knows that this is a player that can perform at the highest level and came back from injury to perform very well at the European Championships last summer. So I think he will play, but I understand those who don't want him to. But I would just urge fans who think that Maguire is the worst player on earth to just try and bear in mind that the reason that social media is telling them that is because he cost 85 million and he's clearly not worth it. But he's also not worth 10 million. He's a good player, but he's not a great player.
So I'm going to, before I hand it back over to Brandon, I'm going to stir the pot for just a second. So in just a simple one-word answer is, England has never beaten the United States in a World Cup game. Is that going to happen this time?
Yeah, I think England will win, but not by a long way.
Okay. What does Bells think?
I'll say it's going to be a draw. I don't know. Probably not, but that's what I'm going to say. I was just watching the 2010 game earlier this morning because we do like historic recaps, and there's a lot of talent on that 2010 England team, and not much on the U.S. team. And it was actually not an even game, but the U.S. had some big chances that they missed, in addition to the Robert Green howler, you know.
Yeah, that was a terrible World Cup for England, and one that I don't think many fans necessarily want to remember.
I wanted to ask you, Dom, in terms of the squad, you look up and down, you've familiar names everywhere. Who do you think is going to be either a surprise or just someone people are not expecting to be really a leader during the World Cup, but really come up big for England?
The thing is, you're asking me during the wrong era of the England team. If you asked me under any other manager, I'd have an exciting answer for you. But the players that Gareth Southgate starts, I think we all know them pretty much. The one player I'd give you, if you're going to push me for an answer, would be Jude Bellingham, who I think not only people want to see play, but I think he's got to the point now where he actually will play. Jordan Henderson has been poor enough at Liverpool this season. And I think Jordan Henderson's a really good player, by the way. Jordan Henderson's been poor enough at Liverpool where I think he's probably lost his starting berth for England. I think Calvin Phillips will come back from injury enough to be in the squad, but not enough to be trusted with a starting place. And I think James Ward-Prowse, I'm not necessarily sure that Southgate thinks he's good enough in the prestigious games that he could perform. I disagree with that, actually. I think James Ward-Prowse is one of England's most underrated players. People hold him, you know, ransom in his midfield play just because his free kicks are world class. But actually, you shouldn't judge someone's, you know, midfield game on compared to something at which they're clearly the best. I think he's the best player in the world at free kicks, by the way. I don't think there's a better free kick taker on the planet. So I don't think you should necessarily judge someone on that. You should judge them on how good he sits as a midfielder compared to other midfielders. And compared to other midfielders, he's one of England's best. But I do think that alongside Rice, it will be Bellingham who starts for England. And I think it's his all-round game which will make him really stand out at the World Cup. The thing is with Bellingham is he is a trustworthy footballer at an age where pretty much no footballer is trustworthy. 19-year-olds blow hot and cold at any position. But he's playing pretty much the most demanding position on the pitch, which is a box-to-box number 8, the all-rounder in the side. But actually, I don't think he's necessarily got a weakness in that. And he's added goal scoring to his list of characteristics this season, which I didn't expect, and I'm not sure even he expected. So I think Bellingham has, especially in these September internationals, the most recent international break, he was so good against Germany. But I think that match might be a feature whereby Southgate does start him. And if he doesn't start him, he will absolutely get enough game time to impress at this World Cup. And so I would say he's the star that people maybe aren't expecting to get on the pitch many times, but I think he will. I think he'll play really well.
He was definitely the name that came to mind for me. I'm glad you brought him up. So wanted to hear from the group here predictions. And I think I'm going to force you to make a pick. And I know Adam was reluctant to do that about the United States, but I want to hear from each of you. What do you think is going to happen in the group? Who are the two teams that are going to come out of the group? And then two, who is ultimately your pick to win the World Cup beyond just Group B? Irfan, I'm going to start with you. And what are your expectations? Who do you think is going to make it out of the group? And who do you think ultimately hoists the trophy?
Oh God. Okay, so this is very difficult. Obviously, making predictions normally is also very difficult in this group. But when you have experts from every other country, it's going to be even harder. So I believe England will top this group. And I think most of you will agree as well. But that second position is just so hard to pick. But with a bit of bias from my side and a bit of good form from Iran and bad form from the other three countries, I would say Iran would finish second. But it'll be very, very close. Like maybe 1 point or maybe even goal difference separating second and third. And the third, I would go with Wales finishing third. And I'm sorry, but I think that USA will finish last. I mean, I saw their games versus Japan and Saudi Arabia, and they made Japan look like such a good team that I don't think they're that good. So I'm sorry, but I think that the USA will finish bottom. And then you said for my predictions for who will win the World Cup. It's a very hard question to answer, but I'm going to go with Brazil. I think that they will win the World Cup. They just have a lot of talent and attack, and I really don't see anyone beating them. I would have gone with France, but something is telling me that the World Cup curse will get them this year. So,
all right. Adam, let's go to you next. How do you think this group is going to end up? And then who do you think ultimately wins the World Cup? I see the struggle in your face here.
I mean, I have to say what Irfan said is totally like possible. I can't even disagree with it. But I think the other way is possible too. So I'm just going to make a ridiculous prediction. The US and Wales are going to get out of the group. England's going to implode. And which they do. They tend to, it happens. It's too much pressure, too many different talented players. I mean, Jude Bellingham, I'm a huge fan of him. Hopefully he doesn't play. Hopefully Southgate sticks with some of the older guys and they implode. And then who's going to win the World Cup? Argentina. Lionel Messi gets his World Cup trophy.
Right. I think you see at most World Cups, there's always one team that everyone is expecting to just cruise through the group and make the knockout stages, and just doesn't happen. And England could be that team. I think based on recent form, you look at the Nations League, I don't know how much stock you put into that, but they have not performed well. And I don't think they're coming into the World Cup on a high. And they could certainly be that team this time out. Joe, I will go to you next. What are you expecting out of Group B, and who do you think will win the World Cup?
Well, I'll be boring. England is going to top the group, and the U.S. is going to get second place. And I agree with Irfan. I think Brazil is going to take it.
Ryan, what are your expectations for the group?
So I've got this like horrible premonition that Iran get out of the group with 3-0 draws because Carlos Queiroz scares the living daylights out of me.
I think it's very possible.
That's going to happen in Tunisia.
England beat USA and Wales and draw 0-0 with Iran. USA and Wales draw with each other, and Iran, we both draw with Iran 0-0, and they could get out of the group without scoring a goal. 7-3-2-2. Literally, I've been having nightmares about that possible situation as soon as Carlos Queiroz came in charge. But I've got to back Wales, and I think we hopefully have enough. And like Adam said, England can implode. They do an implosion. They've had two phenomenal tournaments by their standards. and arguably two tournaments they probably should have won. And I just feel like the Southgate thing is fizzling out a little bit. And that could be detrimental, but by far they're the most talented team, so it's hard to discount them. Based on what Adam said, USA seem to be the one team that are going into the tournament with a little bit more question marks against them compared to some of the others. So I think that let's say Wales are going to win the group, because why not? That's what I'm here for. Someone's got to say Wales are going to win the group. And let's go England second, Iran third, USA fourth. But I could tell you any order, and I think there's an argument for it. That's the beauty of this group. In terms of who's going to win the whole thing, I can't see it being a European team. None of the big European sides are performing well based on the Nations League. I can't see a Germany or Spain or England, probably even Netherlands, winning it. I think Argentina have the best team. Brazil have the best individual players. So I think it'll be one of the two. But I think with the timing of the World Cup and certain things going their way, I think it could be a year for a dark horse. So I think if there's going to be someone, I think someone like Denmark could. I think they're a really, really, really good side, and maybe even, you know, top three or four side in Europe at the moment. And I think they get discounted because they don't have any glamorous names like Germany or Spain do. I think someone like Denmark, they did incredibly well in the Euros, especially with the, you know, the whole situation with Christian Eriksen. And I just think, you know, if a few of the big names get knocked out in the early rounds, which is very possible, I think Denmark, why not? They could go quite far.
Brandon, we are definitely having Ryan back on the show.
Joe and I have been very supportive of Denmark. They're from our projections and statistics, they always are really high in our rankings and a team that we like from a numerical standpoint, but also your points are all spot on, is that they've been tough and they reached the semifinals at the Euro. I think you've got to consider them in the top five in Europe at this point, or just about there. They definitely have the opportunity to go far, and it'll be interesting how, not to get too far off track, but to see how they match up against France, where they were just in the same Nations League group as France and finished higher than them. And I don't think it's impossible that that happens at the World Cup either.
Because they're going to get out of the group with France, I assume. Mm-hmm. That, I think that's one of the easier groups to predict. I like them a lot. I like the organization that they have, and I think it goes a long way. They're a team rather than individuals. And
All right, Dom, what do you think for Group B, and then ultimately who is going to win the World Cup?
With the group, it's difficult. I agree that there's an argument to be made for any of the orders that you could look at. I think England will win the group, but I don't think that they're necessarily good enough to turn around three results on the bounce in which they win every single one. I don't think England will win all three games, but the important question is, do they qualify top? And I think they probably will. I think Wales under Page have been underestimated by a number of big sides, and I think they will probably come through second. But the thing is, these are all teams that you could underestimate. And the problem is with me picking one is that I then sound like I'm underestimating the other two. I'm not necessarily underestimating them, but I have to pick one. And I think Wales possibly will get their game management right where the other two maybe not. In terms of a winner for the tournament, I love the shout of Denmark. I think Kasper Hjulmand's done an outstanding job. And I think if you listed the 10 best European sides in terms of raw talent, only Denmark of that top 10 are a bigger hole than the sum of their parts at the moment. The other nine, whoever they might be, I think are underachieving relative to where they should be. And I think that's what makes this World Cup so interesting. There just isn't an obvious favourite. I think Argentina and Brazil's form in South America can't go unnoticed. And I do suspect that they will have the edge at the end of this tournament, you know, the important end of this tournament. But I actually think, even though Argentina's record is best, I don't think they've lost since 2019, something like that. At the end of the day, I know it's a team sport, but you do need goals to win games. And I'm not sure Argentina have got enough sources of goals. So I think Brazil will win the World Cup. They've got more power from the bench. And yeah. I know it's not an individual sport, but at the end, international football kind of is like that. It's not as team-based. And I think Brazil might have the edge.
Yeah. I think Brazil's a team that a lot of people expect to go very far. If you say at least the semifinals, almost everyone would think they're going to at least make it that far, and plenty would certainly pick them to win it all. But it's been a while since they've gotten there, and they seem to, as the tournament progresses, the last few editions fall a little bit short. So they're going to be a team that I'm interested in seeing. And yeah.
Dom, did you have Iran third, US fourth? I just wanted to
wanted to see if it was a consensus that the US is going to finish last.
Yeah,
that I think will come down to 1 point or goal difference. I'm going to say I'm not going to tell you.
So you've got two fourth and one unknown.
I want to shout out Mehdi Taremi too, by the way. Like what a player he is, and
baller.
Yeah.
I think so, Asmund is one too.
Absolutely.
I like him a lot.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Just an update. Christian Pulisic got an assist versus Salzburg.
So. It was a noisy assist.
Yeah. Havertz did all the job. It was basically the Busquets assist versus for Messi.
We'll take it though.
Absolutely. I do think that England will win the group as well. And I think that among the other three teams, I actually do think it's going to come down to goal difference. There's just not enough separating the teams. And I could certainly see a couple teams finishing on 4 points. I do like the U.S. to finish second in the group behind England. I think it will come together. I don't know that they will progress much further than that. But I think ultimately they do make it out of the group. In second place. I think Wales, I would say, I'm going to say they finish level on points with the U.S., but the U.S. advances on goal difference, and I think Iran shows well, but ultimately doesn't get enough. But we will see. Not a lot of optimism about the United States from the non-Americans, and we'll certainly see how that goes. And then in terms of overall, I think I'm going to have to give it a little bit of thought. I think Brazil will go really deep. The Netherlands is a team that I like that's been just really in form that I think coming into the tournament in terms of how well they're playing, I think they've got a ton of momentum. Another team that probably is not on a lot of people's minds is Croatia that is really coming into the tournament with a lot of momentum. Don't know that they necessarily have enough to go all the way, but I will say the Netherlands are the ones that ultimately win the whole tournament.
Oh, nice.
All right. Well, just wanted to thank everyone again for joining us and listening to our Group B podcast. If you have not yet followed us, our podcast is The Window. We're at Window INTL Pod on Twitter. You can follow myself, Brandon, at @we_global for lots of stats and rankings and anger from other Twitter followers as well. And follow Joe at 12th Yank. And we really appreciate you all joining us today and going through the Group B podcast. I know this is definitely going to be one of those groups where it's going to be interesting. I think every single match in the group stage has a lot riding on it and could really go either way. So definitely a group to watch in Qatar. And just wanted to thank all of our guests again. Please give them a follow, a shout on Twitter, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, everyone.